Hello, listeners. This is Damien with Rahoa.net Radio. I have a couple of guests, Hardy from the Creativity Power Hour and Russell from the Patriot Portal. So, Russ, why don't you go first and tell us about your project that you're working on?
Yeah, well, actually, the Patriot Portal is just one of four sites that I'm currently running that I'm going to combine into a larger site called the Aryan Archive. The Patriot Portal is a list of pro-white websites. Currently, there's about 800 of them in one of 24 different subdirectories that we have. The other three websites are the Colchester Collection, which is an archive of about 1,700, a little more than 1,700 pro-white books. Tallyvision, which is an archive of pro-white videos. Currently, there's almost 600. I'd say about 560 or so on there. It's actually two different video sharing channels. It's the Tallyvision channel on BitChute, where there's about 547 videos, and the Tallyvision channel on GabTV, where there's about 405 videos. But some of the videos on one of the channels are not on all of the others. So combined, there's about 565 or so videos. And then the final website is a website that I started about 8 years ago called Praxis Mag, and that is a collection of pro-white text for the most part, articles, essays, stuff like that. There are some other things in there. There are some videos and some podcasts and stuff. But for the most part, it's a text archive. And the four sites combined, there's probably almost 10,000 different pro-white resources. So what I'd like to do is combine them into one, hire more people if possible, raise some money to hire people so that I can expand at that and have everything that is possibly good for white people in one central location.
Sounds good. And Hardy, tell us about, you know, all the things that you do.
I'm Reverend Lloyd. I'm the leader of the Church of Ben Clausen. I currently reside in Texas. And we're in the middle of a flyer drive. So we're putting up a lot of flyers in a lot of different cities. Our people up in Canada are actually doing a really good job. The hits out of Canada are very high. And we also got people doing stuff in Brazil and Portugal, and the hits are high there as well. Now, I do a weekly radio show, Creativity Power Hour, and that, though, I used to use TalkShoe for, but now I just record it and upload it to the website. If anybody does want to know what creativity is about or listen to any of my shows, you can go to the website at churchofbenclausen.org or creativityreligion.net. And my own personal blog is hardyloyd.net, but that's mostly just humor stuff. A lot of Third Reich, World War II related issues, Hitler essays, things like that. But anyway, yeah, go to creativityreligion.com and you'll find out all about creativity, and I've got several articles that I myself have written on there. Oh, and we are coming up with a newsletter. I am adamant about having a free online newsletter for people to download and read. We are working on that right now. I have a new job, so I'm actually very busy, but we are working on that, and hopefully by the end of this year we'll have that, and we will have a printed version, which you will have to pay for if you want it sent to anybody who is a POW. And that's going to be a watered down version, but we will send one of those to anyone who is an inmate inside the Gulag system in the United States or Canada. And we do guarantee that if they reject the first one, we'll water down the second version and send it back. So anyway, those are the projects we're working on. And, I guess just a little bit about me. I believe in creativity, and I do a lot of street activism, and pretty much that's it. That's pretty much all up front.
All right, that sounds good as well. So, Russell, do you have any questions for Hardy about, you know, all of that?
I do have a question, actually. The thing that you mentioned, Hardy, about sending things to prisoners and that you might have to water them down. Does that happen a lot, or do most of the things you send, do they get through the whatever their censorship system is?
So I did about 10, 11 years in prison. I did time in jail and prison. I was in the state and the Fed penitentiary. Getting stuff in was always difficult depending on the institution. Now, some institutions are different. My last stint where I maxed out my probation time was actually a federal medium. And mediums, for people who don't understand the federal system, is mediums and maxes are the high end. And there's a lot of security, a lot of added security there. There's also a K2 problem inside the feds, but I mean, they're never going to stop that. Anyway, there is censorship. And surprisingly, they'll actually even censor the communist literature because I do a lot. When I was in prison, I did a lot of outreach. And what I would do is try to get pagan literature, Odinist literature, Wotanist literature sent in. General pagan stuff, you know, for the white inmates and whatnot. And I noticed that even some of the communist organizations that I would try to get free stuff from, you know, because some of them would send free books, some of the prisons would actually reject that. So there is censorship, even if you're sending in commie shit, there's actually going to be some, there's actually going to be censorship issues. So the newsletter, it's going to be free online. But I will offer, you're going to have to pay for this though, but I will offer a printed version, and that's going to be a watered down version. You know, I'll take out the Rahoas and the, you know, the white power this and the 88 that, and, you know, the word like nigger and spick and gook won't be in there, stuff like that. So it's going to be watered down. And if any of those are rejected, then what I'll do is I'll water it down one more time, probably where you wouldn't even want to read it, but I mean, listen, if you're in prison, you want to read. So there is the censorship, and that is going to be a problem. I've sent stuff inside that's been rejected, really mundane items that I wouldn't consider hardcore. But I mean, you know, I'm as hardcore as you can get. So I'm probably not judging that right. But yeah, there is a lot of censorship, and especially if you're if you're white pride, even the pagan literature has a hard time getting in sometimes. They try to keep the Wotanist stuff out completely, and the Odinist stuff, they'll try to have you go through they'll reject it. Then you'll say it's a religious right. I have a right to this. Then they'll say, okay, but it's got to go through the chaplain. So, I mean, even white pagan stuff has a hard time getting through on occasion, not always. Usually, especially on the minimum security joints, you can get that stuff in. But yeah, there is a censorship issue.
Okay, and then now it's your turn, Hardy, to ask Russell questions. You have his website, personal things.
So basically, just so I know I got this right, you're trying, well, I guess it's a two-part question. So A is you're trying to just have a giant repository of white racial knowledge. And now, is it four websites, or are you kind of just weaving it into one?
Yeah, that's a good description of it, a giant repository of white racial knowledge. And to the second part of your question, yeah, I'm trying to combine them. That is the goal right now, is to combine them into one called the Aryan Archive, and then expand that. And it's a huge project. I've put probably, I would estimate very conservatively, at least 5,000 hours into the four projects already, probably more over the last decade, probably closer to 10,000 hours. And I've got, like I said, 9,000 and something resources archived. They're only archived minimally. And what I mean by that is I just have pointers to them where you can find them on the web somewhere and download the PDFs or download the video or even watch the video online or something. What we'd like to do is eventually have everything be in-house, take everything and if it's a video, re-edit it. If it's a book, republish it, particularly the digital forms of it, so that it is readable, frankly, because a lot of the PDFs, the EPUBs, or even the HTML sites out there, they're not very legible. They're not well done, and we would like to take all that stuff and do it in a professional way so that pro-white information is available in perpetuity for free in a high-quality professional way for our people.
That's good.
All right. So kind of got the bases covered there, so I don't know what you guys really want to discuss from there. I don't know, Russ, any other thoughts on your mind that's, you know, outside of all that, you know, not necessarily tied to, you know, the projects and such?
Yeah, I mean, I could talk endlessly about the project. Am I echoing or? I can't tell if I'm echoing.
No, go ahead.
Okay. I mean, I have a lot of, I could talk endlessly about this project. When I first launched the fundraiser for it about 2 weeks ago, I wrote up a description introducing me, the archive itself, and the fundraising project. And it came to, well over 3,000 words. So I had to cut it way down. I think I eventually got it down to 1,800 words. So I can go on and on and on about my project. I don't have a problem with that. But I can certainly talk about anything else you guys would like to talk about. I mean, the way I pitched this show when I was just sending it out in social media and I was promoting it, and I pitched it as a conversation about creating a whiter, brighter future for white people. So I'm willing to talk about any of those types of things.
Yeah, so are you familiar with creativity?
I am. I'm not a creator, but I've been familiar with Ben Clausen and his work for a long time. I read The White Man's Bible. Actually, I listened to the audio version of it about 2 years ago. I've been familiar with it for about 15, 16 years. The Colchester Collection has a Ben Clausen profile page, and I think it has everything he's ever written I've posted to it. I think it's just, if it isn't everything, it's pretty close. And I also have a few videos of his on the television channels, interviews with him and stuff like that. And I have most of the links to all of the creativity websites in the Patriot portal as well.
I know you're kind of like a generally everybody, obviously, with your, you know, like pro-white Yellow Pages site and such, but I mean, is there something that you specifically identify with as a label for yourself?
Well, yeah, I'm trying to sort of rehabilitate and reclaim the word Aryan. I like it. You know, just we're Aryans. In fact, I think I read Clausen's Comparative Religions maybe about a year ago, and in there he says he doesn't like that term. But I really like the term. I think it's something that we should reclaim it and use it, precisely because it means what we are, right? It comes from the Sanskrit word Arya, meaning nobility or the noble people, and that's what we are. So that's what we should be called.
Yeah, I mean, people generally know what you mean with that, but you know, because of the media is distorted a lot of his stuff, like people can use their own imagination with that, obviously. Yeah, like it's a certain type of white person only, you know, and it can kind of cause division unnecessarily that way, I guess. But it, you know, it is a catchy word that kind of bluntly puts something, I guess, as well, instead of like, you know, playing around with, you know, things like conservative. I mean, patriot's also a kind of subjective word as well. It doesn't mean you're for the current establishment, you know, which a lot of people could think as well with that.
Hey, Damon, did you want me to chime in at all? Or?
Yeah, go ahead. Your turn.
Okay. Well, I had another question for Russell. I didn't realize I was muted, but I'll get to that in a minute. So the reason that we reject, that creativity rejects the term, is there's a lot of Nordicism. I'm sure both of you are obviously familiar with that, but there was over the years, and yeah, there was at one point in my life where I was kind of into Nordicism a bit, but I met a lot of I guess unneeded division because of the Nordicism. There's a, I don't know, some people I guess call it Anglo-Saxonism or something, but basically, and I ran into this when I was in prison, is there was a lot of issues dealing with nationality, ethnicity, you know, using the Nazi racial diagram, you know, soils, Mediterraneans, Alpines, Nordics. And, you know, the reason we reject is because we like to embrace, you know, white people all over the planet. Some people are more into the Nordic thing. Other people just want people to be from Europe, or Europe specifically. I mean, even white people from other countries, not necessarily, but it's just one of those terms that there is a lot of division. Although for me personally, I've kind of always thought of the term as meaning more of an Aryan was a white person who was racially pure and who was racially conscious. To me, that's kind of what the term sort of means, but unfortunately there is a lot of Nordicism out there, and for anyone who is listening, who has tried to join organizations in the past, like myself for instance, creators don't have an issue with, you know, somebody not being Nordic or Germanic or Scandinavian or something like that, because oddly enough there was the AB guy in prison that was a Nordicist, even though he had like brown or hazel eyes. I just thought it was a little odd that this dude who had brownish eyes was a Nordicist, but it can cause divisions. But I mean, for me, I think the term probably should more really mean somebody who studies, somebody who's racially conscious, but unfortunately that's not really the term.
Okay, Russell, you said that the actual term, the term comes from Sanskrit. I mean, what that brings to my mind is like it's Middle Eastern, then, you know, in a way. Are you still there, Russ?
Yeah, I think my phone dropped that last few words you said there.
Well, I mean, what Sanskrit be more of a Middle Eastern type of vocabulary, you know, of,
yeah,
like terms that they would make, I guess?
Yeah, it was the native language of the Aryan people who conquered and settled India. So in popular imagination today, we think of that stuff as being like these brown people, these Dravidian people, these what we see as Indians today. But they were in fact at the time they were Aryan. They weren't non-white. Right? So Sanskrit was. As far as we know, it is the most ancient language of the Aryan peoples that is still extant. In other words, we still have examples of it. The most ancient Aryan language that is still spoken today is Lithuanian. Right? And Lithuanian and Sanskrit are almost identical. I mean, they're very similar.
Okay, let's... Did you say that you read like at least the main two creativity books, which are Nature's Eternal Religion?
Yes, I read Nature's Eternal Religion. Well, I listened to the audio version of Nature's Eternal Religion and about half of the White Man's Bible. I think I said the White Man's Bible the first time, but it was actually Nature's Eternal Religion. And I listened to about half of the White Man's Bible. I didn't get through the whole thing because it seemed redundant. Like it was saying a lot of the same things that Nature's Eternal Religion was saying. I've also read bits and pieces of almost everything he's written. I also read the whole thing of Comparative Religions. I republished a version of that because I couldn't find an HTML version anywhere. So I republished a version of that on the Colchester Collection. And I've listened to at least a half a dozen or so of Mr. Clausen's different interviews and speeches that he's given.
Yeah, I mean, creativity is basically, you know, even though it uses many words to say something simple, it's as basic of an ideology as you can get for being pro-white. It doesn't really bring in a lot of things that, you know, are something that somebody could actually disagree with, because, you know, it's based on logic. And it approaches everything, you know, for what's good for white people. So what you said that you're here, so that's what led me to ask, like, what you identify specifically as. So what would you say that you either don't understand or reject?
That's a good question. I think probably the biggest concern I have with it, if that's the way to put it, is the what seems to me to be the total rejection of the existence of a supernatural God. I mean, I can logically arrive at a supernatural God, right? You can simply define God as something known to exist and then go from there, right? And then nobody can deny that God exists because you've just defined him as something that is known to exist. For example, you could say that God is the greatest thing, right? That which is the greatest thing is the thing which is God, right? And if you can then establish that there is one thing that is greater than all other things, which is actually very easy to do logically, all you have to say is, well, everything is greater than any part of that everything, right? So the cosmos itself is the greatest thing, so therefore the cosmos has to be God. And when I say cosmos, I mean everything that exists, whether it's known to exist or not, right? And this, is, of course, was William Pierce's position, right? Cosmotheism, right? So theologically, I'm cosmotheist. In fact, I just did a post the other day. Theologically, I'm cosmotheist. Identically, I'm Christian identity, meaning that I like what Christian identity has to say about us being the chosen people of God. Absolutely. I disagree with them, and I've written about this too, when they say that we are the Israelites. We're not. That's doesn't even make any sense on any level, and I could write a book about that, but we are the chosen people of God, the cosmos, right? We are, as far as we know, the single most advanced life form that has ever existed. So therefore, we are the Godhead of the living cosmos, the living God, which is the cosmos, right? To get back to your question, though, well, let me just say, finish one more thing about that. As far as creativity goes, I borrow Clausen's great ideas concerning salubrious living, Rahoa, race's religion, and, of course, the foundational moral tenet of creativity, which is that which is best for the white race is that which is moral. Right? This is so obvious to me. It's logical. Right? Like you said, it can't really be argued with. so there's a lot that I like about creativity. But if I had to define myself as a religion, this is difficult to do because it's a religion of one. I'm the only one that practices it. I call it Arianism, right? And it borrows from the five great pro-white religions, takes all of the best parts of them and mixes them into one religion. So it's not a religion yet because I'm the only person who practices it, if you want to call it practice. I'm the only one who observes it. I'm the only one who knows about it. I've created it in my own mind. It's sort of a personal gnosis for me, right? Get back to your statement about these things can be logically proved, certain things can be logically proven, and they should be part of the religion. And I had said that you can logically prove that there is a supernatural God, right? And once you get to the point where you say, okay, God is everything, God is the cosmos, right? You can then use an axiom, which most everybody accepts to be true, which is that the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So using the word super and supernatural to mean anything that is superior to or greater than, right? If the whole is greater than the sum of the parts, and all of the parts and the sum of those parts are natural, then the whole is superior to or super to the natural, and therefore supernatural. Now, I'm not necessarily saying that this means it has some magical quality or something. Maybe it does, I don't know. But just through using logic, you can now prove the existence of the supernatural. So the things that I've heard Mr. Claussen say and the things that I've read him say, I've never heard him say anything that I don't agree with other than that. I think that you can get to a supernatural God. I don't know that it benefits anybody to say that this God is in the sky and loves us, he's looking down on us, and he's granting us miracles when we pray to him. I agree with Claussen that that's foolish. But, in fact, I agree with David Lane when he says, he claims that there is one God, right, even though he's a pagan who is a polytheist, right? He claims that, well, really, there is only one God. The foreword to, was it Creed of Iron by Ron McVan? He makes a statement that that God is the absolute, and the absolute doesn't care about us. It's too huge, too big, we're too unimportant. So we have to pray to the under gods, the gods that are under that, like Odin or Christ or what have you, right? He doesn't say Christ, that's my word. He says Odin, of course, Votan, really. But you have to pray to gods that care about you. Perhaps they're your dead ancestors and their spirits are around listening. I don't know about all that stuff. I'm not claiming that that's what I believe. But I do accept the idea that there may be there's some sort of spiritual attachment. Stephen McNallan talks about metagenesis, and it's very interesting stuff about how the souls continue through the generations. So maybe somehow you can pray to them, and they will intercede for you on behalf of the Absolute. I don't know if that's true or not, but I accept that the Absolute does exist. Right? God the cosmos exists. God the cosmos is superior to nature and superior to itself, in other words. Right? It's a paradox, but that makes sense. If you accept that God is unintelligible to human beings, the only thing that human beings can't understand are paradoxes. So God must be at least one paradox, probably an infinite series of paradoxes. I think that largely you can arrive, for instance, to the point where you accept that God exists and God does not exist. Right? It would have to be that case, right? God would have to be, from a human perspective, because we perceive ourselves as moving through time, it would have to be that God does not yet exist, right, for us, because we're moving through time. Right? And by definition, if God is all-powerful, then God would have to have power over time, and time would not exist for God. So therefore, if we're moving through time, we have not yet reached the point where the cosmos has perfected itself into God. But once it does do that, it is now backward compatible, and it stretches all the way back through time and exists forever. So God both exists, God the Absolute, God the Cosmos, both exists and does not exist. So if there's one point that I disagree with Mr. Claussen on, it's that point there, that there is no supernatural God.
Well, in that kind of explanation, nature... Yeah, but... I mean, it just kind of keeps it more so to Earth by calling, all of that just nature. But I'll let Hardy get in here and, with an explanation I'm sure he has about all this.
Yeah, I was waiting. I guess in response to... to that, the reason that we reject the supernatural, in fact, I was thinking about this while you were talking, is it's not so much, there's two ways I could put this. One is that, who cares, I think is the big thing. Even if the universe was a planned out thing, even if you could only account for the universe through creationism or, let's say, through evolution, a deity, a being evolved into a godlike state, say a few billion years ago, that it really boils down to it has nothing really to do with us. So one way of looking at our rejection of the supernatural is that even if the supernatural does exist, it has no bearing on the war we're fighting against the Jews. So it's, there's that way to look at it. Another way is that it's just, we creators like to see everything logically. And, you know, when somebody says, this is not an attack on any one person. If somebody comes up to me, because I've had these conversations before on the street, if somebody comes up to me and they says, you know, you're sinning against God with your racism, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's my question is, well, first off, which God are you referring to? Because there's like 50,000 different deities out there. And second of all, who cares? So as far as, I guess, the belief in a particular theology, shall we say, a particular theology as in Christianity or Islam, you know, or maybe Hinduism, you know, you have different beliefs. Everybody thinks they're right. They're all based upon faith that nobody can prove. I'm kind of jumping around here, but, you know, it's just something you can't prove. And to believe in something you can't prove, like when someone says, you know, you're sinning against Jesus, I think today is one of their holidays. And, you know, like you're sinning against Jesus with your racism. And to, you know, my response has always been, you know, like, what sin? What are you talking about? What sin? What God? Do you have any proof for this? Why do you believe in something you can't see? And so there's that. And but I think they, to make it a short, to just point to the obvious, is that we reject supernatural, A, because it's illogical. You can't prove it. And anything you can't prove can't be real. Some people say, well, what about atoms? Well, you can conduct experiments, you know, to see if atoms exist, or you can invent a microscope. But I mean, to try to claim that there's some type of, or it could be a race of deities, you never know. You know, that some deity or a race of deities exists in another dimension and occasionally interferes in this universe, it's just kind of silly. So that's why we creators reject it. But I've always asked the question, that's really funny. I've always asked the question, is why somebody would want to believe. And I think that that's the other point that we creators make. Excuse me. Is that I have always asked, and Ben Clausen asked this too, is why would you want to believe in whatever religion, whatever spook-based religion you want to believe in? Why would you want to believe in an afterlife? Why would you want to believe in sin? Why would you want to believe in a deity you have to worship? And I've never had anybody ever give me a proper answer on that one. I've watched a lot of Christopher Hitchens debates, and I think he's only asked that question once. Nobody ever answers it. But, you know, why would you want to believe? It's like Islam. Islam is a total enslavement of the individual using spook-based religion. And I don't understand why somebody would want to live as a slave and then basically believe that upon death they continue for the next 100 million years as a continued slave. So I've never understood that. So it really boils down to that as far as we creators are concerned, is that A, if a deity or a race of deities were real, we wouldn't worship them anyway. Screw them. You know, why did you create the Jews? You know, how come you're not helping us out? We're obviously the embodiment of the universe within our race. How come you're not helping us out? And the other thing is, you know, it's just a kind of a waste of time to believe in the supernatural, even if it was real. I mean, I was raised Mormon, and, you know, I talked with one of my cousins, you know, like what, he asked me why I left the church. And I said, well, because I don't believe in fairy tales, you know, and he was like, well, what if, you know, you're wrong and we're right. And I said, well, look, first off, if your God is real, I wouldn't want to worship the guy because he seems like a dick. I mean, making you pray to him all the time and, you know, obey some weird rules that go back centuries. I don't understand that. But anyway, so that's kind of a long answer to how we see spook-based religion. It's really, you know, why would you want to believe it? I do understand some people want to believe in the supernatural because it gives them comfort. I can understand that. My mother's dead. I miss her very much. I would really, you know, it would be nice if she was somewhere, but I don't believe she is. And I think me not believing in an afterlife actually encourages me to fight harder because I only have one life. And I know a lot of people like that. A lot of Christians or born again Christians, I guess, mostly will always try to twist that around. Well, you know, if you're an atheist, that means you're just going to do drugs all day. And I don't do drugs. I've never done drugs. I don't believe in drugs. I believe drugs are just another form of enslavement, just like monotheism is. But for me, not having an afterlife, having a religion without a heaven, without reward, it drives me to fight even harder because I only have one life to give to my race. So I think that for us creators, we enjoy the fact that this is it. And a lot of people, they don't understand that. They want to believe in the happiness of their ancestors living in Valhalla or heaven, or the, if you're Mormon, the celestial kingdom. I actually like it this way. You know, my mother's dead. I remember her every day. I loved her very much. I still love her. You know, I love her very much. And I'm alive and she lives on through me. And, her grandchildren and her great-grandchildren and great-great-grandchildren will carry her on, you know, through the bloodline, through DNA, through remembering. So as far as needing an afterlife, we don't see the need for it. And as far as the supernatural goes, believing in something that you can't really prove is kind of silly, but B, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter. I think it boils down maybe more so to that it's just something that has no bearing on our lives, whether you pray on Sunday or conduct some pagan ritual. That's kind of a long-winded answer, but that's the way we creators see it. And I do understand the Christian identity perspective. I'm not saying he's Christian identity, but I'm the Christian identity perspective, the Odinist perspective. I understand this Odinism. It's, you know, a traditional white religion. I understand that. Christian identity, it's a pro-white form of Christ and sanity. I understand that. I understand wanting to believe that your ancestors live somewhere in death. But, you know, using my mother as an example, she lives in my heart and she lives in my mind and she lives in my blood. And, you know, my child and her grandchildren will carry that on. And so we don't have, so we just don't see the need for it, I guess, if that answers it. It's kind of long-winded, but.
Okay. I don't know if Russ has anything he wants to say in response to that yet.
Yeah, I mean, I could continue this discussion all day long, but
yeah,
if I had to say one thing, it would probably be there were so many things he said, and I had thoughts on all of them. I'm trying to collect those thoughts and say the one thing that might be the most important. I guess it's said something. I don't think I could even recall what exactly that was, but there was something I was going to say about how pagans fit into. I guess what I would say is this. he said that there was one question he likes to ask people. What good does it do you, or what's the purpose of it, or whatever? And believing in a spirituality or a supernatural God. I'm going to preface it with this, though. I'm going to say that my idea of a spiritual or a supernatural God is I agree 100% with Ben Klassen. There is no little man in the sky looking down on me with great favor. That's not my idea of it. Spooks in the sky, I agree with creativity on that. Right? There are no spooks in the sky. Right? but I think that people, the reason why I want to bring the concept of the reality of supernatural into Arianism, if you will, this sort of personal religion that I have, is that I think it solves some problems for a lot of people, and that it gives them, it does for me, race is religion. And I say that race is religion because becoming racially aware and racially responsible gave me purpose in life, right? And I think that that's a very spiritual thing. It's a very spiritual quality. It's an article of faith, right? There's no way that we can possibly know if we're right. I feel that we are the good guys. We are the Godhead, so to speak. We are the chosen of God, and Jews are demonic, demented beings. And I feel that way, but I can't prove that that's true. It seems logically true. It seems obviously truthful to me, but I can't prove it. So I think a lot of people want that spiritual aspect to a religion because it gives them purpose. I think that Dr. Lloyd was right, that many people don't do it for that reason. They do it because it gives them comfort. I don't want to sound cruel or callous, but frankly, I think people like that are very weak. To me, it gives me purpose. It makes me want to fight harder. The idea that this whole thing is bigger than just me and my life, right? I am fighting not just for white people right now, but for all the white people that have ever existed and all the white people that ever will exist. And that, to me, is a very supernatural, very spiritual quality, which it would take longer to explicate, but that seems to indicate that there must be some sort of a supernatural connection between us all.
Okay, to kind of go back to what we were touching on before, like picking on the terms, kind of, which I normally don't like to do so much, but just for, you know, clear understanding, the term Aryan, in your opinion or fact, people have said this, so it is kind of a subjective word that can be misleading, is I'm sure you'd probably disagree with this, that other people have said, like, Aryan is more like just being noble, so like anybody could be white as Aryan, even if they're non-white, just because their behavior is, you know, upstanding and noble. Go ahead and reply to that first.
Yeah, I mean, to me, first of all, the Aryans are a genetic group of people. And as Dr. Lloyd mm-hmm. pointed out, a lot of people use the term Nordic and, you know, to mean Aryan. They use it as a synonym. I don't do that. I think of Nordic as being specifically Aryans that ended up in the northwestern part of Europe. That's, to me, is what the Nordics are. But yes, Aryan is a genetic thing. Oddly enough, Aryans traditionally in the ancient world were not, and really even today, are identified by non-whites, not by their blonde hair, but by their red hair, right? Dr. Lloyd may know something about this. I don't know where he did his time, but in California, whites in prison, is the white prison gang called the Pecklewoods, which comes from blacks, oddly enough, in the South, referring to white people as woodpeckers, but thinking that they were being clever and reversing it and calling them Pecklewoods, right? Because they saw white people or Aryan people as redheads, even though very few of us actually are. That was the distinguishing quality, right? The thing that distinguishes us from all other people. Blonde hair does to a degree, but not really, because there are people who are in the sort of northern part of the Mediterranean world that have started to develop light brown and blondish hair. But you don't find red hair there unless they're intermixed with an Aryan, right? So traditionally, Aryans could be identified by their red hair, and there's a lot of evidence that anybody who had a position of leadership, right? In other words, in the ancient world, in other words, somebody who was of the noble class, right, had to have red hair. And if they weren't born with red hair, they dyed it. They dyed it red. They colored it red. To this day, you see that in small villages throughout, even say the Middle East and stuff. All of the hetmen, all the headmen of the little villages, dye their hair red in order to claim kinship to the ancient rulers, right, to the Aryans who swept down in and conquered those lands. So to me, Aryan means noble, because that's what they were. They were the actual nobility, the ruling caste of those countries, those places that were non-white. They came in and conquered them and ruled over them. Now, of course, there were also Aryan lands that were just Aryan. There were no non-whites there. There's a word that is synonymous with Aryan, and that's Indo-European. That's the word that's used today. We hear about Indo-European languages. That word Indo-European means Aryan. They're the same. They're synonyms for one another. But an Aryan would have to be genetically white, in my opinion. This is the way I use the term. They'd have to be genetically white, but they'd also have to be noble. Dr. Lloyd said that he once had a view of that word. I guess still does hold an understanding of that word to mean that somebody who is basically racially responsible. And I would say the same thing. A white person who is racially responsible. As far as the divisive part of it goes, as far as, well, who counts as white? There are three main groups of Europeans, right? The old Cro-Magnon, Uralic hunter-gatherer types, the newer Mediterranean farmer types, and then the very newest, the Aryan type that came in and conquered those two groups. So our Mediterranean farmer types, for instance, would they be considered Aryan? Well, they're not Aryan, so that does create division. I'm not really sure myself how I look at that. Instinctively, I think to myself that, yeah, they're not. They're visibly different from me. But at the same time, I've known people in our movement who are Mediterranean farmer types. They're from Italy or what have you. They might have some Aryan genetic code in them, but clearly they're mostly Mediterranean. I've also known people who are from the older Uralic group. They tend to have brown eyes and be, you know, shorter, squattier, and you know, powerfully built, not taller like the Aryans are. But who are some of the best pro-white people on the planet. But I think Dr. Lloyd is right. For me, there is a distinction. If you are not genetically Aryan, then you're not Aryan. So it does create that divisive thing. But I'm not, I guess the best way to put it is violent in my divisiveness, right? I believe that at least in the short term, and by short term I mean probably the next few thousand years, 10,000 years, I don't know, there are going to be people of all different races on this planet. And it doesn't behoove us to run around acting like animals and we have to kill them all, right? That's not something that the average white person, even Aryan person, is going to accept as some sort of behavior that they want to engage in. So it's self-defeating in that sense. But I do believe that in the long run, I don't believe that we have to wage war against non-whites in order to. I'm going to put this harshly because I want to make it clear what I'm saying, but I'm not thinking of it in a harsh way, right? We don't have to wage war against them in order to eradicate them from the planet. I know it's a harsh statement, but nature tends to do that on its own, right? The superior species will move into all the niches, all the environmental, all the, I can't think of the word I'm trying to say, but all the little economic, ecological is the word I'm trying to come up with, all the different ecological niches and push out the other groups, right, the groups that they evolved from. And Aryan man has evolved from all the other men. We are the highest form. And it is inevitable that all other people more or less disappear, from, go extinct. There may be small pockets of them here and there. Maybe there'll be some group of black people who run around in some godforsaken jungle that Aryans aren't interested in. I don't have a problem with that. I think that's fine. Just like I believe that we evolved through and past all other species that are on the planet, like squirrels, for instance. But I don't think that squirrels should be eradicated. They fit an ecological niche that's no, they're not competition to us. When they are competition to us, if they try to come into our homes or our food stores and they eat away at it or they cause damage to our shelter, well, then they're the enemy and they have to, we have to kill that thing, right? But as long as they're not harming us, we don't care if there are squirrels on the planet. And I feel the same way about non-whites or about non-Aryans. As long as they're no harm to me, I don't care about them. I'm not out trying to harm them. If they're going to harm me, then yeah, I'm going to have a problem with them. I'm going to have to fight back. And I think that Aryans as a group should fight back. But I do believe that ultimately, if we have a whiter, brighter world, if we live salubriously, as Dr. Clausen wants us to, that will inevitably force out the existence of all other people on the planet, with the exception of some small pockets in places that we're just not interested in living.
Okay.
Hey, Damien, is it possible for me to interject?
Yeah, go ahead. Kind of stumbling around. My response, go ahead.
I'll get back to the whole the violent thing in a second, but I just wanted to say one more thing as far as the supernatural went real quick. There is this, probably not what he's talking about, but there is scientific evidence for some things that could be classified as supernatural, such as ESP and meditation, things like that. But we creators just, we don't see them as supernatural. Anything that can be proved in the laboratory is science. It may have a spooky element to it, but like quarks and ions and, you know, atoms are kind of spooky when you think about them, but it's still science. And so I think there's a big difference between believing in stuff that obviously, you know, isn't there, and then accepting certain spiritual components of the universe that are, you know, evolved naturally, you know, through evolution, shall we say. Anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there because my church is, the Church of Ben Clausen is a little bit different, and I do write some esoteric stuff occasionally. Matt Hale, obviously, and the WCOTC did not focus on anything like that. So I just wanted to throw that out there that so there are some elements of the universe that they're still scientific. They just seem a little weird. But anyway, as far as the whole violence thing goes, for anyone who's ever read any of my writing, the Wolf Manifesto, for one thing, I'm an 80s, 90s kid, and, you know, I grew up on a lot of David Lane, Louis Beam, Robert Matthews type stuff, you know, niggers in school, that type of thing. So, obviously I'm going to have a very hardcore thing to say. James, you're echoing. Anyway, so, but the thing that, it's Russell, right? That's the name? I want to make sure.
Yeah, it's Russell James. Russell's the first name.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I just want to, yeah, I'm bad with names. Anyway, so what Russell was saying as far as, I know some people are like this, and that's okay. I mean, I've been involved in the white power movement for over 30 years now, and I still network with people that aren't white. You know, they know my stance. And of course, the official stance of creativity in the Church of Ben Clausen is we believe in racial separation. You know, we're not, you know, out to throw people into easy bake ovens. Although there are some people I would like to do that to, but you know, our official stance obviously is to, cut off all white aid to non-whites and, you know, to look after our own. And of course our race will expand, their races will shrink. And so we're fighting for racial separation. And I, you know, there's enough room on the planet to do that. However, people need to keep this in mind is that, and this is not just a nigger thing, because a lot of people are like, well, it's just the blacks, but, there's other races that are very violent too. they're like we're seeing in the United States today with, if you ever watch these SJW videos on YouTube, or, you know, like we, you know, the conservative podcasts and things like that, you know, like we had in New York City a couple of days ago, you know, non-whites are violent, and they're very animalistic. They have not evolved to the state that we have. And, you know, unless you're pushing a full racial separation, unless you have full racial separation, there's always going to be violence, especially with blacks and mulattoes. That's always going to happen. They're very violent, very hate-filled. They've been filled with such negative propaganda for so long that they just act upon it. And so it's, I don't know exactly what he was in referencing to as far as the whole violence thing goes, whether it was some of my stuff or what, but, you know, it's, we're going to see more and more of it. In fact, I'm surprised we're seeing as little today as we are. Of course, that could be, you know, media manipulation, but, you know, there's always going to be violence, and we have to be prepared for that. And, you know, it's especially, you know, people know not to screw with me because they know I'll be violent. I've been very open about that. I'm willing to go back to prison, you know, just to fuck somebody up if they come at me and say something stupid. So people know that violence with me is there. So they leave me alone. Blacks, though, en masse, you know, there's only one way you can really teach them. You can either force them out with a pitchfork, or you can use a gun. And unfortunately, the violence is just going to be thrown at us. And we have to be prepared for that. And I think it's important that we are willing, and in fact, in some cases, show that we're even eager to be violent. Because the only way, I think there's an old Roman adage where if you want peace, prepare for war. And so we always have to be willing to show, you know, these ARA fags, you know, the black gang bangers, you know, the mestizo cartels. We have to be willing to show them that we're just as violent as our forefathers were back in the Irish and Italian gang days. And that if they screw with a white person, they're going to get a foot put in their face. And so I can't speak for people like Louis Beam and John Metzger, but as far as myself goes, you know, I definitely am one to promote violence and lone wolf tactics, not just in retaliation for terrible atrocities that have been committed against our people and that need to be avenged, but also as a means of showing mud people, because I mean, the Jews are just on this power trip, but if we show their tools, you know, the Shabbos Goy Stooges, the black gangs that are basically manipulated by the Jewish media, if we show them that we are willing, even eager in some instances, to be violent back, then that's a deterrent in and of itself. And I know some people are like, well, you know, we have to wait for the collapse of society before we go crazy. And I agree with that. The Church of Ben Clausen is set up in a way that it's really individuals, primary groups, and family units. You know, our congregations are designed to be semi-independent. And the reason for this is so that people can focus on their families, or singles can focus on trying to find somebody to marry, have children with, of course, raise those children, prepare, stock up on supplies and weapons for when this screwed up society that the Jews have created collapses. So I understand that. I'm all for that. But occasionally you do just need a couple skinheads once in a while in the dead of night to go out and do something. Obviously, you know, you're never going to get enough people just to walk down the street to the point where the Jews are like, okay, this is obviously not going to work out. We're going to leave now. But occasionally, you know, the enemy has to know there will be repercussions. So everybody should keep that in mind. But yes, definitely prepare. And as I always tell people, your talents definitely dictate. I've said this for 30 years. Your talents dictate your involvement in the white racial loyalist cause. Whether you're a creator or an Odinist or atheist skinhead or a full-blown national socialist, what have you. You know, your talent dictates your involvement. If you're great with explosives and, you know, being a ninja-like shadow in the world where, you know, you never go online, you have no social media presence, nobody knows who you are, then yeah, sure, have at it. Go out and do something. But, you know, most people aren't Rambo. So whatever your talents are, that should be your involvement. If you're a woman and you're good at teaching and raising children and you're very fertile, then yeah, that should be what you do. If you're a man and you're intelligent, you're not really a warrior, but you're good at writing things, or maybe you're good at providing for your family, helping provide for other racialist families, then you should focus on that. So your talent should always dictate your involvement. And not everybody needs to be violent, but we definitely need to be prepared, and in some cases, occasionally, be even eager to show our enemies that, yeah, if you fuck with us, you're going to get screwed. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I had a quick question for Russell. Did you record anything back in the 90s? Because your voice sounds real familiar.
No, I didn't really get active until about, I think, 2007, 2008. I started to get active.
Okay, never mind. Then you just sound like somebody. It might have been one of those Aryan Nations audio cassettes I had back in the 90s, but your voice just sounded kind of familiar, so I was wondering.
Okay.
Anyway, I just wanted to throw that.
Yeah, so, Creativity was, written 50 years ago by Ben Klassen, largely because of how the movement had different fractions in it, you know, even back then, over religion and, you know, being nationalist or not, and, you know, different things, which just means influencing society different ways. Everybody had a different idea about what pro-white means, and, you know, a lot of people still do today. So it really hasn't, you know, straightened out the white man's thinking even within the white movement yet. So that's its purpose, generally, is to do that. So when somebody reads Nature's Eternal Religion and the White Man's Bible, along with other two that pretty much explain everything, of, you know, a way to look at it to put aside a lot of the misunderstandings that people have been misled into believing, you know. Because I mean, obviously, you know, one can't be a Christian, then, you know, that Christian religion's God's creation, such as black people, because, you know, and then, you know, obviously that can be used against your ideology, as it does, and show hypocrisy and contradictions, you know, in that way of not having a clear foundation for your belief system. So, I mean, that's, you know, a very general observation, which is what creativity does. It's, you know, logical observations of history and a lot of, you know, things that cause problems in society with having, misconceptions. Things should work in the natural world. So, you know, people that come to like a listing of sites or something that have all these different viewpoints, they're challenged with creativity to actually rethink, you know, their positions on things.
Yeah, am I still on? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. I'd like to just go back to something that Dr. Lloyd said a second ago about the violence, because that's such an important topic. I'd like to make it clear what I'm saying about it. I like to tell people that violence is a function of power. Currently, our enemies have all the power. So if we try to be violent, we're going to lose, by definition. The more powerful group will win a violent skirmish. And what we need to do is get power, right? White power, that's what we're all about. Not just white pride, but power, right? We want white men to have power, right? And that needs to be our driving goal, is to gain power. And the reason why we want power is so that we can be violent. We can reclaim, we can take what rightly belongs to us. Now, that's going to sound like a contradiction to what I said a bit ago. But from my perspective, it's not a contradiction, right? Because when we have power, we're not going to call what we do violence. We're going to call it law enforcement. So that's just, you know, maintaining the natural order of things, right? Just ensuring that things happen the way they're supposed to happen. And we'll have our people in blue suits, and we'll like the cops. They won't all be bastards anymore because they'll be us. Right? The reason why they're all bastards now is because they're anti-us. Right? They work for our enemies, and they do so gleefully. So the natural, that's something I probably should have introduced too, is my idea of the natural order of things, because it explains, it makes clear what I'm, I think that God, the cosmos, is a living, breathing, is a thing that exists, and as it expands, as it grows, as it evolves, there is a straight line of action, and that action is the natural order of things. Right? So in the natural order of things, when white people are living the way they're supposed to be living, they're living salubrious lives. I love that word that Clausen coined years ago, a salubrious living. When we're living salubriously, the natural order of things becomes the eradication of those things that are harmful to us. There may be violence involved, but again, we won't call it violence. We'll call it law enforcement, right? We'll have other terms for it, but it won't be violence, because violence is always something that somebody else does to you, right? If somebody breaks into my home, that's an act of violence. If I defend myself, that's an act of self-defense. No, you know, nobody calls that violence. It is violent. I mean, it may be violent self-defense, but it's not seen that way. So what I'm talking about is, I believe there will be skirmishes, but I believe that white people are so essentially superior to others, and I believe that the natural order of things, God, the cosmos, is on our side. So we focus far too much time thinking about, well, let's go out. What are we going to do when the balloon goes up, when the shit hits the fan? And, you know, are we prepared? Do we have enough guns and ammo and rice or whatever the hell else we think we need, food stores and water supply? And what we really need to be focusing on is simply taking power back. It is the simplest, easiest way to have everything that we want, because that's essentially what we're talking about. I don't believe that we should wait until society collapses. I don't believe that we should hope for balkanization. I think there's a 50-50 chance balkanization will happen. I don't think it's a good thing. I think it's a good thing in the sense of white people will be able to regain regions of the country, but I don't think it's a good thing overall. Why do white people want to give up anything? Let Mexicans have the Southwest and blacks have the South. Why would we want to give up anything, right? And why would we want to have white people competing with one another over the different regions that they do control? We should be united. We should have the whole planet, right? So my idea, when I say that I don't think we need to be violent, it probably is just a matter of semantics, because, again, we won't call it violence. We'll call it law enforcement.
Mary, you want to reply to that?
I guess the only thing I would reply to is that the I differ with him on I think Balkanization, there we go, it is actually a good thing. First off, it's inevitable. I truly believe that the system that the Jews have created is going to collapse. There's, in fact, it's fallen off the cliff. It just hasn't hit the ground yet. That's the only thing. It's going to continue for a few more years, although things seem to be the degradation of society seems to be speeding up. And as I've said in my own radio show, the Jews have created a golem, and it's gotten away from them, as it always does. You know, the Jews always do this. They create this instability. They deracinate a society. They create some type of enemy to, you know, take out their enemies, and then it just turns on them. So, you know, this whole society that the Jews, this modern 21st century society, global, multinational, multiracial society that the Jews have created is going to collapse anyway. That's inevitable. It cannot last. It, by its very foundations, it cannot last. Excuse me. And I think the balkanization is a good thing. I've written articles over the years on this, and what I cite for my stance is that every time that there's been a major worldwide calamity, a disaster, what have you, white people have risen to the top. White people always rise to the top. So what I promote is that we need, kind of like Tom Metzger and, of course, Louis Beam, is that we need more chaos in the world. We need the system to collapse faster. My worry is not if society will collapse like a nuclear holocaust, it's that it will take too long and the Jews will be able to wipe out the best portions of our race. But yeah, it's going to happen and white people will rise to the top. So balkanization, from my standpoint, is a good thing because we always have risen to the top. We had the thousand years of darkness with Christianity in Europe after the fall of Rome. You know, we rose up through the Renaissance, more so with the Age of Enlightenment, you know, and then all of a sudden we had the great, you know, white thinkers of the 19th and 20th century. So, you know, there was the whole Vikings thing, you know, during the Dark Ages, there was that, you know, and I mean, if you want me to, I'm not going to spend the time to go into this here, but for those of you who know my writings, I do cite Graham Hancock a lot, and I believe that the white race has actually gone through, over the past 50,000 years, has gone through several different downfalls and has always popped back up. So I think actually balkanization is a good thing, also not just because we tend to rise to the top every time, but it will allow our enemies to be divided even more. So Blacks may be used by the Jews, but they don't like the Jews. And once the main system that the Jews are using to manipulate and control things collapses, then all these little puppets they've created will all go their own ways. And the Jews will grab frantically at the strings trying to salvage something, trying to maintain control. And then we can use that. You know, people know I've networked with Turks, Arabs, Mestizos, Japanese, Hindustani for, you know, last 30 years. And trust me, they all hate blacks. They all hate Jews. you know, you have a lot of people in these countries, these non-white countries that hate communists, hate Zionism. So, you know, I think what we need is we need society, the Jewish society we have today, we need that to collapse. And then just let the chips fall where they may, because I think that the white chips will fall the right way. That's my belief. So I think it's a good thing. And as far as taking the power back outside of society collapsing, this is my opinion. I just don't think that's going to happen. The Jews are just too embedded. Yeah, you know, they've created these monsters that are getting out of hand. I mean, you know, we see the libtards and the commies and the blacks and whatnot, like just, and the homosexuals just going like crazy now. Like they're all hopped up on crack and speed. And they're just like, I mean, they're making the Jews look real bad. I think some of the Jews are like, you know, we've gone too far. You know, this everybody's going to come after us. But anyway, you know, I think it's going to happen probably by 2050 that it's just going to tear itself at the seams, or the economy, which is really held up by fake digital currencies now. I mean, there's nothing's based on reality anymore. So I think one way or the other, whether all these little groups are tearing away different directions, or just economically it collapses, or some massive famine that nobody can, you know, try to control or manipulate, it's going to happen. And I think the white race will rise to the top. So I think actually I disagree, you know, with Russell on that, but I think we'll rise to the top. But before that, I don't think we're going to get the power. Although, I mean, and there, in some places that happens. I mean, you know, we obviously, Russia is a racial state. People hear me talk about that a lot. I mean, you know, Russia's obviously a racial nation. It's got nukes to back it up. But I don't think Russia is going to be able to save the entire planet from the Jews. And then, unfortunately, thanks to white technology and Jewish, well, at first funding, probably not now, but you know, now you have the Chinese, or, you know, have white technology, although it's still behind, you know, white Russia and you know, the, I guess, majority white U.S. Army. But, you know, so we just have these issues and, you know, being outbred. And anyway, I think collapse, long story short, I think the collapse will actually help white people. And as we have over the last 15,000 years, I think we'll rise to the top. And I think actually chaos is actually probably the best thing that nature could give us. It will allow our DNA to shine. Anyway, that's my thought.
Yeah, to accomplish that, you know, more white people need to straighten out their own thinking. You know, and that's what the purpose of creativity is to go through history and show the errors of the ancestors, you know, that tried segregation, apartheid, and different world that fall apart and end up in ruins and, you know, mixed races and such all around the planet, you know. So, yeah, so, you know, white people, you know, have to get their minds, you know, together and have goals to benefit themselves, you know, start looking at out for their own best interests rather than, you know, how you can all get along. And being overly concerned about an afterlife and such, you know, which all these past civilizations have concentrated on and basically kicked the can down the road to where we are now. So, you know, there's just as much to do with ancestry as to, you know, honor, at least. So, yeah, so that's what creativity's purpose is. You know, a lot of people want to expect something from it that's not there. You know, they're looking for a deity, and you know, because they're so used to, you know, these things that just add to confusion, you know, and hobbyism and such. You know, creativity is actually serious business. Yeah. It gets to the root of the problem. You know, the hobbyists went, you know, appreciate that because they want something that is more entertaining, you know, and is kind of, you know, not, you know, based in reality and motivating them to solve a problem, I guess. And I think Hardy has something to say back to that.
Yeah, I wanted to throw in there because, yeah, no, you're right. One of the great things about creativity is, and Russell did bring this up earlier, how he did mention that it's very similar, the white man's Bible with nature's eternal religion. The reason that Clausen, and when you read all the holy books, You will see a lot of things being repeated. Clausen did that on purpose. He did it so that somebody that was reading these books would get the basic info embedded in their head. Kind of like when you go to school, you know, your kindergarten or grade five or whatever, high school. You know, you go over the math problems over and over again, even though you learn that 2 + 2 = 4, you know, like when you're like 5 years old. But, you know, you go over that again when you're 6. And so the genius of creativity is that not only is he saying basically what is common sense, you know, just basic genetic realities, you know, through evolution and nature and whatnot, and just life experiences, but he says it in a way that where it gets embedded in your head. So creativity definitely, there is some repetitiveness, but that's done based on design. And creativity definitely, and this is something that both of you have actually mentioned, creativity, because Russell has talked about from a more traditional standpoint, and Damien has brought this up, is creativity definitely makes somebody question things that they were brought up. Most people are brought up in a different form of traditionalism than what Russell would be following. But, you know, your parents, right? You know, you go to church on Sunday, you go to school Monday to Friday, your dad worked, you know, your mother stayed home. You know, everybody went to baseball, everybody went to church, you know, everybody was American, you know, these types of things. And then, of course, creativity comes along and Ben Clausen says, oh, well, you know, you're white, you know, you're not American, you're not Canadian, you're white, you know, you're part of a race, you're not part of a nationality. And a lot of people have a real hard time with that. I have run into so many. I've had a lot of debates and arguments with people over this that, well, why do you have to reject, you know, Americanism? Why do you have to reject nationality? Well, because nationality divides white people. You know, it's the same with religion. You know, we reject Christianity in all of its forms. Well, A, because it was invented by Jews, but also because it's divisional. I mean, you know, look at Ireland. You have Protestants and Catholics that are killing each other for no reason whatsoever. It's the same Christ insanity. It just has different names. And, you know, it's, you know, Ben Clausen is like, no. You got to rethink this. You have to reject nationalism. You have to reject the Christianity that you were brought up with. You have to reject, you know, this right-left box paradigm that you've been taught to believe in, that if you're white, you're supposed to vote libertarian or conservative. If you're a commie or a mud, you're supposed to vote Democrat, because it's all the same shit anyway. And so Clausen is like, no, you got to throw everything out. You got to step away from the box that you were raised in, and you got to rethink it all. And a lot of people have a hard time with that, especially the nationalism, not so much the Christianity these days. When I first started preaching to people, you know, they would always be, well, what about, you know, my family's Christian, you know, blah, blah. But today, and maybe this has to do with the whole Donald Trump, Biden, you know, stuff. But, you know, a lot of white people are now openly saying, well, you know, if, you know, I'm proud, I'm not ashamed to be white and I'm a pro-American. And so they're now kind of being confused with each other, I think. I don't know if that's by design by the Jews or if that's just, you know, part of the backlash to, you know, BLM and Obama and you know, all this other crazy shit going on. But, you know, creativity says, no, you know, you're white. You got to be a racist, meaning you have to care about your race. You have to put your race first. And you can't hate, you know, your white brothers and sisters just because they are born in Europe or South America or Australia or South Africa, because you're all part of the same race, the same species. And that's, you know, that's very hard for people, very hard for people. But I do understand the traditionalism that some people promote. I understand that there's, you know, there's some of the really good philosophers of the 19th and 20th centuries that talked about traditionalism. Julie Savola talked about radical traditionalism, although a little bit different. But, you know, so I can understand that, you know, it's I guess it's probably just a human thing, you know, when you're raised that when you're raised a certain way, it kind of just sticks with you. You know, I guess I'm just a little bit different. I kind of just go wherever the science leads me. And the science, of course, led me to creativity. But anyway, yeah, so that is a very hard thing. You know, they you know, some people don't like Mediterranean whites, or they're really gung-ho about being pro-America, and they just can't get it through their head that, well, you know, the Jews really run the country. So anyway, I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, also like the strategy or the tactics of creativity, you know, being, you know, taking advantage of the religious rights, you know, guaranteed under the, you know, First Amendment of the Constitution, you know, for America or the United States.
Yeah.
You know, that's something that, you know, the Jewish system has allowed and helped, you know, the blacks do. And plus the Jews have used that themselves. Yeah, because you are granted protection. And creativity is a legally recognized religion in the United States, and I guess the world as a result. Perhaps they may not honor it as much, but they have to here for now. You know, but it also did qualify for tax exemption like any other religious church that was taken away when maybe they realized what it's belief system is or something, and that wasn't fought for to keep, I guess. So there's,
well, the great thing about America is that religion is given a wide berth. You know, I mean, back before I converted to creativity, I you know, I referred to myself as a Nazi mystic. And, you know, the great, you know, whether it's creativity or Mormonism or National Socialism as a spiritual belief or Odinism or Wodenism, America, just by law, by constitution, just by tradition, kind of just says, okay, fine, that's your religion, whatever.
Okay, let's try to get Russell involved back in the conversation. What's on your mind, Russ?
Well, you guys covered a lot of good things. I wasn't expecting this conversation to necessarily go in this direction. I think when I promote it online after we're done here, I get the link. I think if it's okay with you guys, I might promote it as something like Arianism versus creativity or something like that. I don't know if you think that's a good way to go. My thinking is that I want to try to inspire people to go to the site and listen to it. I don't know how many listeners we have right now live, and I don't know how many listeners you regularly get who download the program, but I'm hoping to, you know, at least be able to push 30 or 40 or 50 more people that way. And I think maybe presenting it like that might be the way to go. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, your idea is really not too much or at all in conflict with creativity. I mean, you know, atheism is, you know, fairly similar enough to be compatible. I mean, you know, it's more other ideologies, you know, where people, you know, accuse creators of starting trouble in the white movement. But we're not the ones bringing alien belief systems into it and try to shoehorn it, you know, where it belongs, really. So, I mean, we're, as creators, you know, just straight out being basic pro-whites and not trying to have any extras, you know, that we can't prove and actually is foreign to... you know, Europeans and stuff. You know, I mean, we are actually where we belong. go ahead, Hardy.
Yeah, well, one of the interesting things is because when I was raised Mormon, and originally I became, and probably Russell would probably agree with this a little bit more, but I originally, excuse me, when I was a teenager, I kind of just stumbled into the white racial movement. I had always had my own racial beliefs, you know, things that just made common sense. And, you know, going to both public and private school, it gave me, you know, it allowed me to experience niggers firsthand, as well as, you know, rich white people raised, you know, outside of having to worry about the ghetto. And so that was definitely an interesting education in and of itself. But, you know, I always referred to myself as a Nazi mystic or spiritual national socialist back then. I didn't hear about creativity actually up until almost I converted. And, there's definitely similarities between, there are many similarities with some aspects of the Third Reich, with Nazi mysticism, which is a little bit different than the political social form of National Socialism. Odinism, and especially Wodenism and cosmotheism, definitely have a lot in common with creativity. I really think it's just the Christian identity guys that take issue with creativity as far as that goes. And our guy, Brother Shane, up in the Northwest, whose actual location will remain classified. he heads our congregation up there for the Northwest, and he himself has kind of blended Wodenism with creativity. He likes aspects of both David Lane and Ben Clausen. I don't really have an issue with that. I think that I think there's a lot of good aspects of Wodenism. You know, you're not really focusing on the spook worship aspect. But, you know, there's certain aspects of Nazi mysticism or Arianism, as I used to call, you know, some of my beliefs, and Russell uses today. There's a lot of, in the ancient philosophy as well as the 19th and 20th century philosophies, there's a lot of nature-based concepts and just things that are rooted in common sense and logic. What Ben Clausen did was he took out the supernatural aspect and said, look, this is what we got. This is who we are. It's plain black and white. We don't need to dress it up. David Lane liked to dress things up a little bit with the Wotanism, and cosmotheism, I think, is creativity kind of dressed up. Julius Evola, who I mentioned in the chat, Julius Evola's philosophy would be also very similar to both Odin or Wodenism and creativity. So I think really it's just the Christian identity guys that have an issue with it, but or maybe some conservatives that are pretending that they're white, you know, pride. If as long as you're pro-white, as long as you believe in logic, I think we can all get along with that, you know. Obviously, I would push creativity. That's what I believe in. I converted to it 20 years ago, and I love it. It's my entire life. My entire being revolves around the words of Ben Clausen. I've met a lot of guys. You know, I did dabble in Odinism, Wotanism for a few years, and you know, I've met a lot of those guys, and they're good guys, and they raise their kids right. And they're willing to work hard and fight hard. And, you know, I kind of think that Pierce kind of stole a lot from creativity for the cosmotheism. But, you know, if it gets people away from Christian identity, or especially just being Christian, you know, and like an American nationalist, you know, and kind of like, you know, born again type, if it gets them away from that, I'm all for it. Obviously, you know, the white race comes first. And we have to focus on the white race. But, you know, white people, and just to kind of end with this, white people we're highly individualistic, you know, we're a highly individualistic species. And we just tend to like to have our own little beliefs, our own little niches in life for each of us. And so I think having a plethora of ideologies is inevitable just because we're white people. But as long as, you know, we kind of stay away from the Jew spawn stuff and, you know, the kosher conservative Zionist, closeted Zionist people, then, you know, I think at the end of the day, you know, we all know what our race is. And we all know who the enemy of our race is. And I think that, or at least I would hope, is the guiding principle for everybody, whether you're an Aryanist or a creator or a Wotanist, an Odinist, or just a white pride atheist, hopefully.
Yeah.
Did that sound about right?
Yeah, to go back to philosophers, I mean, you know, Friedrich Nietzsche actually coined that the future man would be referred to as creators, and, you know, you'd also be vegan and such, you know, so includes Ben Klassen when he named the religion creativity and the adherence of, you know, creators. Yeah, so actually creativity in a way was even founded before then, you know, just not officially like established yet. Are you guys wanting to wrap this up, or is there anything further to add?
I just want to ask Russell if he agrees with what I just said, or if he wanted to throw in his thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, I like to tell people that if you're pro-white, you're all right. That's how I look at it. If you're willing to accept the three premises, one, white genocide is real, it's happening. Two, Jews are the cause of it. And three, we have an obligation to those who came before us and those who will come after us to resist it. If you believe in those three things, then you're all right by me.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally, I first got started in the movement back in the 90s. It was 1993. And this is, of course, before the internet. But that's basically when I started to become active. And back in the 90s and early 2010s, I did see a lot of division. You know, a lot of it was, you know, one side was Christian identity, the other side wasn't. But, you know, there was just a lot of division, and we still see that today. You know, my group has a bigger dick than your group does and stuff like that. But, you know, I mean, at the end of the day, as long as you're for the white race, as long as, you know, you want white people to have their own destiny in their own hands, and you want to, you know, get that destiny back from the Jews, you want to separate yourself from obvious, you know, these people that have nothing in common with our own race, then, you know, at the end of the day, that should be a uniting factor. And unfortunately, it's not as much as it should be. But I think especially with the backlash to just the insanity we've been seeing over the past 10 years, especially over the last few years, you know, I think we're probably going to start seeing a little bit more white unity. In fact, I know for certain that we've actually gotten some recruits that 20 years ago wouldn't have given us the time of day. But thanks to BLM, Obama, Biden, you know, just the CNN and the Jewish media just on full-blown, let's, you know, murder all white people. I think things are starting to tick in the right direction. I think the wheel's turning, and as long as we can just agree that, yes, the Jews are behind this, and yes, we are white, we are one race, and we need to unite at the very least on that premise. And, you know, who cares what group you belong to, as long as at the end of the day you care about, you know, stopping the genocide. That, you know, I just don't understand. So some of the arguments I've seen from people, yeah, I know in the past I've kind of contributed myself. I understand that. But some of these arguments I've just seen really stupid. So Christian identity people saying we're all going to go to hell because we reject, you know, heaven and Yahweh. And, you know, then there's actual like white pride people that, you know, say you got to be pro-America or all this other stuff. But, you know, as long as we recognize the genocide, as you said, as long as we recognize the genocide is an actual thing, because it is, as long as we recognize the Jews are the ones that are primarily behind it, which they are, and as long as you care about your white race, that really should be the determining factor at the end of the day, or at least I hope so.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah, we've had like a dozen people here live on the call, you know, in short notice, you know, when we put together this show. I also come from the 90s era of, you know, the white movement. And back then, you know, the internet was fairly new for, you know, general on there. And, you know, they also had the, in a way, these like listings of websites, you know, to create, you know, like a, you know, a resource where you know, you could find sites you otherwise wouldn't know about, you know, besides just people's friend links on their own and such. You know, they would have the top 88, the top 30 and such, and it would keep track of which ones were more popular with the views and hits and such. Yeah, so you know, like a web ring and everything. Yes, I don't know if you're aware of that, Russell, since you, you know, came around this stuff later. So it's kind of you're reviving that, which is good to have kind of a general area, you know, and you know, it's good to have creativity.
Yeah, Damian, I started the Patriot Portal because of the fact that, I mean, it really wasn't something that was needed because we had search engines, and you could type in white nationalism or pro-white or something, and you could find most sites. But when Google and other search engines started to delist us, right, remove our sites, I thought, well, we have a need now for a central location that lists these sites so that our people can find them, because our enemies are making the sites very hard to find. I was already doing the Colchester Collection with all the pro-white books, Tallyvision with all the pro-white movies, and Practice Mag with all the other pro-white texts and stuff. And I thought, really, the only thing that's missing is some kind of access to pro-white websites. And the books, the movies, the texts, and the web directory of websites are very agnostic, or whatever you want to call them. You know, it demonstrates that I don't favor any one group over another. If you're pro-white, you're all right, and I list you, or I list your book, or I list I put your movie, your video in the television archive of videos, or what have you. I believe in the concept of, you know, marketing and salesmanship. They have these concepts of, for instance, food courts in malls, or auto miles for selling automobiles. They're not instinctive, right? They're kind of counterintuitive. Most people would think, well, gee, I don't want all my competitors around me. But it actually is better, right? When you have a central location where you can go and you can get all different kinds of food, people will flock to it. It acts like a magnet, right? Like a center of mass drawing people in, right? So I'm thinking that when I combine these four sites into the Aryan Archive, I will never discriminate against any site or any group as long as they are pro-white. And I have had people who have been fairly rude to me, have kicked me out of their mailing list because I said some minor thing that for some reason they didn't like. It hasn't happened a lot, but it's happened a few times. But I don't even discriminate against them, right? I put their stuff in. If you're pro-white, you're all right. So my idea is that this site can be the center of mass. It can be like a black hole sucking anybody with any sort of pro-white inclination or any kind of pro-white instinct in to learn more. And from that, we can create a pro-white culture, pro-white community. And this will help all pro-white groups by creating a larger pool of possible recruits to recruit from.
Okay, and circle from where we started, you know, with promoting the projects and websites and ideas and organization and everything, philosophies. So Hardy, go ahead and wrap up and plug how to reach you and everything once again.
Hi. Well, I want to thank you for having me on here, and it was nice to talk once again to you and also to Russell. Russell, I'm going to give a spiel, but send me the links to your thing. I'll make sure to put it on my website.
Okay.
So just send me an email. If anybody out there is interested in creativity, now I do have links. I want people to know that I am a bit esoteric. In my own personal attitudes, I do read a lot of Graham Hancock and Julius Evola and stuff like that. So some of the articles I write, it's not all just creativity. Obviously, it's through the lens of creativity. But on the website, I do publish. I've actually been very busy with the new job and with running the church. So I haven't written as much as I would like to. But I do occasionally, throw out some stuff that some people might find a little strange coming from a reverend of creativity, but it's all based on logic and archaeological findings and things like that. So there is that stuff too. Anyway, go to the website. It's churchofbenclawson.org and creativityreligion.com. Actually, I own a bunch of those. It's kind of all the permutations of those. But anyway, churchofbenclawson.org. creativityreligion.com, and for my own personal blog, hardyloyd.net. That's just a funny thing. For the church blog, it's creativity1973.org, and that's just daily postings dealing with creativity, race, news articles. My own personal blog, though, is mostly like funny stuff. Anyway, but I do have links to non-creators on the links page for the church website. We add every week to the church website. I do a lot of the work myself. There's not a lot of bells and whistles, but it's got the information. You can download, of course, several of the holy books. I haven't put them all up there yet, but you can download. We have the membership manual. If you want to start your own chapter, listen, I want to say this once again. Creativity is a religion. I believe in creativity with all my being. I'm not looking for people to just join up and pay dues and then I send you a membership card. It's not like that. This is a real religion. So if you want to convert to creativity, all you have to do is just download a copy, say, of the little white book, and then just convert. That's it. I'm not asking for anything else. We do have a lot of items for sale on the church website, but I'm not telling anybody they have to donate or they have to buy things. I just want to spread the religion. I want you to be white, be proud, be open about it. That's one of the hardest things today. And trust me, I know. I've been to prison. I've lived on the street. I've been fired from jobs for being openly pro-white. I'm never going to change. I'm always going to be openly pro-white. Anyway, so anybody does have questions, you can always reach me. I answer all emails. Reverend Lloyd at... there's so many of them. Reverend Lloyd at, I think it's Reverend Lloyd at churchofbenclawson.org and Reverend Lloyd at creativityreligion.com. I believe those are the two main ones. There's also Dr. Hardy Lloyd at yahoo.com. Anyway, send emails. I answer all questions. And as long as you're white and proud and you stand up for your people, you stand up for yourself, you stand up for those you care about, that's really all any of us could ever hope for or ever ask for. So anyway, thanks again, Damien, for putting this together. And it was nice talking to you, Russell. And send me those links. I'll definitely put them up on the website. And okay, thanks for everybody for doing it again. All right, cool.